Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, sponsored today by the audiobook edition of Will Eisner, A Spirited Life, now available on iTunes and Audible.com, and recorded live on blogtalkradio.com from the new media and American League Baseball capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Tim Pilcher has a dirty mind. Well, that's what some people think, no doubt. He did just publish the second edition of Erotic Comics, A Graphic History, and it is filled with cartoon images of men, women, aliens, and even a cat dancer and some robots engaged in all manner of physical intimacies. Now, Volume 2 picks up where Volume 1 left off and examines how the form has become an international publishing phenomenon by showcasing artwork that has inflamed desires, incensed censors, and caused controversy. Now, fully illustrated with rare art in Volume 2 by Howard Cruz, Melinda Gebbie, Hunt Emerson, Howard Chaykin, Giovanna Casado, Tom of Finland, and many others, this book covers everything. The erotic comics explosion in America in the mid-80s, the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender comic scene, UK and European erotic comic creators since the 70s, and the Japanese hentai phenomenon. Now, a word of warning. If you are under 18, if you have certain sensibilities that might be easily offended, or if you just are in the wrong place, I'm going to give you the next couple of seconds to change shows. Go listen to the Fly Lady. She's lovely. Or my friend Dr. Blogstein or Olivia Wilder. But for the next 30 minutes or so, this is going to be probably somewhat adult conversation. All right, I hope you're gone. You can't handle it. And Tim, welcome to Mr. Media.
Hi, good to talk to you, Bob.
Good. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Yeah, very good.
I hope that we scared off anybody who would wind up complaining later that they had no idea that we were going to talk about, you know, stuff that's related to SEX.
Yeah, so I hope you didn't scare everyone off. There's a few people still listening.
Well, as if I could do that. Yeah.
Probably we'll get more listeners that way.
Yeah, well, you know, that could be. So what makes a healthy young man, I don't know how old you are, Tim, but what makes a healthy young man decide to push aside Archie Comics and Peanuts in favor of this stuff? I mean, a slow day in Brighton? What's going on?
Well, I think it's really down to just a natural progression and growing up of you know, comic book readers. I think it's one of those funny things that if you look at sort of any other media in the world, pornography or erotica or whatever you want to call it is there, and it's just a sort of a fact of life. But it's always been this really interesting thing where as soon as you kind of mention the words sex and comics together, people go like, ooh, because still, even to this day, I think it's getting less so. But people that don't know the media, don't know the medium and are really into it, immediately assume comics are superheroes or they're Archie comics or they're stuff that's for kids. And so to then sort of put sex in it suddenly seems like a misnomer. There seems to be this strange dichotomy of the two going together. But really, I think it's just a natural progression from sort of people expanding out into a different genre. It is just a genre, just as a Western or a supernatural thriller or superheroes or any of those kind of things. It's just another way of expressing an art form, and I think in a genre. So that's, and it was for me, it was one of those things where it hadn't really been written about. There's this kind of secret history, as it were, of comics. And no one had really kind of looked at this. The last person to do any kind of in-depth analysis on it was Maurice Horn, who back in about 1980, I think he did a really good 85. He did a really good book called Sex in the Comics, which, you know, was a great book, and it kind of got me thinking, well, why hasn't anyone done this for like the last 20 odd years? Particularly seeing there's that after his book came out, there was this big explosion in erotica in America, you know, with sort of Eros comics coming out from Fantagraphics. So, yeah, it just seemed like the time was right. And I think, you know, the industry and the market and general public perception has moved on to a more mature place that people can say, well, you know, maybe, you know, it's like they were doing back in the early 80s, late 80s, early 90s, you know, is biff, pam, pow, you know, comics aren't just for kids anymore. I think actually we've now reached that kind of point of acceptance. And this is to show that sort of area, really.
Well, and I want to just clarify something that you said as you were starting. You were talking about a natural progression, because this is where in the States some fuddy-duddies tend to get upset. Are you suggesting that for everyone it's a natural progression to go from reading, Archie to Spider-Man, Superman to Omaha the Cat Dancer, or it's not for everybody.
It's probably not for everybody. What I was actually trying to say was that as people grow up, they generally get an interest in sex. And as you mature as an adult, the majority of the population of the planet are interested in sex in some way, whether it's very sort of safe and prim and proper. But, you know, there's a lot of people put a brave front on it and act quite prudish or anything. But I think it's a very powerful driving force in human nature. I think it's, Richard Dawkins called it the selfish gene. You know, there's this drive to procreate and recreate. And that is hugely powerful. I mean, as they say, you know, the two strongest draws of sex and death, you know, it's kind of like it's something that that just attracts, but it also repels as well. I think that's it's a fair comment to say that there are some people that find it very uncomfortable and, you know, find certain situations very awkward or difficult to deal with, and that's fine too. Yeah.
Well, particularly if they discover sex after death.
Yes. Well, there's a little bit of that in book one, which was, funnily enough, drawn by Pulitzer Prize winner Art Spiegelman, who did a little strip on necrophilia. So, you know, even the great and the good have been tainted with the erotic brush.
I always thought that Art was a bit of a stiff, but, you know. No, just kidding. So you've done these two volumes, and they're beautiful books. I mean, they're just incredibly well done. Did you learn anything? I mean, obviously, I'm guessing, you know, it was probably fun to do the research and find all the material, but did you learn anything about erotic comics along the way?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, it was really just an initial thought. It was a kind of, why hasn't this been discovered, and starting to examine it. I'll have to confess, I wasn't particularly a huge fan of erotic comics when I started it. And, you know, generally had that sort of perception that, it's all going to be sort of pretty badly drawn or, you know, pretty badly written or anything. But I was actually pleasantly surprised to see how much material was out there was actually of a quite a high standard, and learned tons. I mean, you know, the interesting thing is, more than anything, is the sort of history of censorship of comics runs hand in hand with the history of erotic comics. The two are just kind of so intimately tied for so many reasons, including the obvious things of like Frederick Vertim and the Comic Code Authority in 54 and the comic book purges, and how governments have really tried to repress or stop certain material being published or marketed to the general public. And that goes back as far as the little Tijuana Bibles that were produced in the 1920s, which were obviously completely illegal, and nobody, you know, a few artists have been named on them. But generally speaking, they're pretty anonymous. And those were looked down upon as obviously being highly illegal. And in a lot of ways, when you start to look at this, you think, well, it's a bit sort of crazy to think that, you know, there's these governments trying to control what somebody is drawing. You know, that's all they're doing as an artist is sitting down there with a pen and paper and drawing sort of dirty pictures. Yeah, you know, sort of there seems to be this fear from governments that anything with sex in it has got a very powerful force behind it. And so they try and, you know, censor this stuff. A lot of the time is because there is a lot of sort of political satire within sex comics as well. And it's it can be used as quite a powerful tool because as soon as you put it into the world of parody, you can pretty much get away with anything under free speech. So,
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that, so I think, you know, throughout history, there has always been this kind of battle with various, you know, legal battles, which still go on to this day and still happening with the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, who constantly fighting for rights of individuals to read, you know, various comic books. And it's very interesting that there still seems to be other individuals that want to stop them from reading comics. And I think, you know, the key thing is to say that, well, obviously, if you're not interested in it, then don't read it and don't look at it. It's there, but just ignore it, like so many other stuff. But to try and prevent other people who may want to read this material to not see that seems draconian, I guess, slightly.
Now, help me with something, because every few months I get an email about this, and you can put this to rest. My last name is Andelman, Bob Andelman. I am not Bob Adelman, the author of the Tijuana Bibles, comic Bibles. I periodically get that. These were created, like, I think in the 1930s to 50s, and it was not me, folks, okay? I'm not like 100 years old. I just want to clarify that.
Yes, in fact, I think when we first got in touch, I did exactly that. So,
did you do that? I don't remember that. Oh my
goodness. Yeah. I think when I first emailed you a long time back, when I was starting this, I got those two confused myself. So it's easily done.
you can support me now that I did not do that.
Absolutely, he's not the man, folks.
But I am willing to collect the checks. You know, so what is it? What does this say about you, Tim? I mean, do you have a dirty mind? Are you just a curious guy? Are you just an open-minded guy?
I think I'm a curious, open-minded guy. I wouldn't say necessarily dirty. I think it's a really interesting thing that, you know, people immediately assume that if you're doing this kind of material, then you've got to be some kind of pervert or some kind of sicko or something like that. And, you know, generally speaking, all of the artists I've met and spoken to who are in the books are really pleasant, lovely, down-to-earth people with no, you know, sort of no sort of strange quirks that I know of or whatever, and just regular people who want to look at a particular area and explore that in a storytelling capacity. I mean, you know, things like Howard Chaykin's Black Kiss, which was one of the first sort of erotic comics to almost kind of cross over into the mainstream, as it were, and to be sold in comic shops, although it was pre-bagged up in special sealed bags so that the general public or browsers couldn't look at it. But, you know, this is a guy who is a renowned comic artist and writer. He's respected throughout the industry and just decided for 12 issues to do an extremely hardcore erotic comic. You know, mostly as an experiment to see what he could do and what he could achieve within that genre as such. And what he did was very, you know, it's very shaken, it's very convoluted with its plots, but it has a heart to it. There is a proper story there. You know, and although there's lots and lots of explicit sex in there, there's a point to it. And I think that's the key to a lot of sort of erotic sort of, you know, material. In volume 2, the foreword is by Alan Moore, and he said a great line in there, which is the great thing about, or the thing about, you know, erotica is that it can be done very easily, but it's not done very well. So it's kind of like, I think you equated it with adolescent poetry. It's the kind of thing. So consequently, you do get a lot of material out there that is just thrown together. It's either badly drawn or it's just sex scene after sex scene after sex scene. And I think the material that really sort of resonates or has any kind of longevity is something that's got a lot more creativity and thought behind it. I mean, a good example was something like Cherry Pop Tart by Larry Welts. Now, what he started off doing was doing basically an Archie parody and just drawing in that kind of style and taking the kind of principle of, well, what if, you know, Archie and Jughead and everything actually acted like real teenagers and they smoked pot and they drank and they did all the kind of bad things that, you know, teenagers do as they're experimenting and, of course, having sex. And so he kind of ran with that parody, but he took it much, much further and started talking about, you know, freedom of expression and parodies on, you know, politicians and parodies on sort of Wizard of Oz and Rambo and just looking at all those different ways of exploring it. You know, so the sex, it almost becomes like a peripheral to what he's actually talking about. So, you know, and again, sort of something like Omaha the Cat Dancer is essentially, it's a great epic soap opera, really. And it's just about a couple who are in love and one happens to be work as a stripper. But really, it's a long, loving relationship within this long saga. And within that loving relationship, they have sex, and we see that. So, you know, it's not about necessarily pure titillation as such. It's putting sexual scenes and frequent sexual scenes in context. I think that's key.
So, okay, and now in some cases it's not about titillation, but I actually wanted to ask you about that. Do you find in your research that there are any of the artists, writers and artists who create this kind of material, that they're doing it for their own gratification? I mean, did you ever hear of any of them who were like, you know what, I know it's good when it gets me off?
I think, yeah. I think some people definitely, I'm not going to name names, but I think that is definitely a point. I think no true erotic artist could probably work and do this stuff without feeling aroused necessarily, because otherwise it would come over as hollow and shallow. I think you know, if you can't arouse yourself if you're doing the artwork, then you haven't got much hope for your readership, really, I think. And I think that's one of those cases. Yeah. So I mean, you know, looking at sort of people like you know, Italian artist Giovanna Cassotto and people like Milo Manara, I think there's definitely an added interest there, a personal interest in what they're producing. But I think, you know, a sense of humour is also what's really important with a lot of erotic comics. If you look at a lot of them, they have a very good sense of humour and kind of slightly take the mickey out the whole thing because, you know, let's face it, humans in pursuit of sex is usually quite a ridiculous thing.
I had Dennis Kitchen on the show about a week or two ago, and of course Dennis is a longtime underground comics publisher and artist, and I, you know, I remember talking to him, and I, you know, one of the great things I liked about the underground comics when I was an early teen was that I guess my parents weren't hip enough to catch on that I was, you know, I'd pick these up at a head shop or whatever, and I could read these comics and be exposed to, oh my God, these adult things, and you know. It seemed like kind of a gentle way to me anyway to see what else was going on in the world, what the world was about.
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, it's very interesting that sort of, you know, the progression of sort of, you know, erotica and comics and that side of things, because certainly, you know, people like you know, Spain, S. Clay Wilson and Crumb. Robert Crumb were exposed to things like the Tijuana Bibles when they were kids. You know, these things would be kind of passed around secretly as with amongst teenage boys and, you know, sort of sniggered at and this kind of thing. And I think that there was definitely a hint of influence on them, and certainly for S. Clay Wilson, who would then say, well, okay, you know, let's push the boundaries. Let's, you know, really explore the medium and sort of explore, you know, ourselves and our darkest psyches and really push things forward. And in some ways, I think what they managed to do was to kind of bash through every kind of taboo and tear down everything that you would think would be impossible to do in comics, and just said, okay, there are no taboos, and do this stuff. And it's, you know, some of it's very shocking, and some of it's, you know, very funny, and some of it is you know, possibly nauseating or whatever. But, you know, ultimately, what they managed to do was to liberate the storytelling medium of comics to show to everybody, actually, you can do anything here. This is just purely a delivery mechanism. You can tell whatever story you like. And so I think sort of, you know, the underground comics was a key jumping point from having something that was really underground, like the Tijuana Bibles, to elevating it to a broader scope. I mean, it's very interesting when they talk about the underground comics, it's purely just because it wasn't coming out from the big two, really. Which were only kind of doing sort of the superhero stuff, or, you know, the sort of safer type of comics. So,
I have to say, in his defense, that Dennis Kitchen said that they really weren't publishing them for the 13 and 14 year old Bob Andelman in New Jersey at the time. So I don't want to cause a problem.
And I think that's what I was trying to say earlier, was the fact that there's this natural progression whereby, you know, adults were, you know, generally, naturally, comic book readerships were growing up, and publishers were not producing comics for grown-ups. So they went out and started producing their own titles for their peers, rather than, you know, producing for kids. And I think that's how the evolution of comics has certainly gone, with things like what Fantagraphics have been doing and Eros, is to say, well, actually, you know, we're in our 30s or whatever, we want to see some adult comics and see something that's, you know, not even necessarily with sex in it, but just with an adult sensibility. And a lot of the mainstream comics weren't publishing or producing that stuff. So we've seen a maturing of the industry as a whole, and a development. And I think with that maturing, the natural thing of, you know, going through an adolescence and coming out on the other side is sex. I think that's just one of those parts of human nature. So I think that's, you know, that's and I would have said probably that that underground comics part was an adolescence. It was being deliberately puerile, deliberately OTT, and deliberately sort of in your face. And kind of comics had to do that to come out the other side and say, okay, well, we've got beyond that now, and let's look at this in a really sort of sensible approach.
Tim, I want to ask you, Dennis years ago told me the story about the first time that he'd met Will Eisner, and that they were at a comic convention in New York, and Eisner had heard of Kitchen and wanted to see some of his work. So they went out to the floor where all the exhibitors were, and he took him over to where there were a bunch of underground comics. And before Kitchen could show him something that he published, Eisner picked up a book by S. Clay Wilson, Captain Piss Gums and whatever,
right,
it was.
Yeah.
And, you know, Eisner looked at it and just was aghast and put it down. And what I wondered is, now, and Eisner, having known him, I mean, he was a very fairly open-minded guy, but, you know, everybody has their limits. What did you find in researching these two volumes over the years that was just over the line for you?
Well, I mean, there's nothing, obviously, in the books that would come into that. I think there's a lot of Japanese stuff which possibly wouldn't, you know, get to see over here. But, I mean, you know, in my travels when I was in Tokyo, did see some stuff that I thought, you know, actually this is, you know, sort of quite pernicious. It's, you know, making me feel uncomfortable. And, you know, a lot of they seem to be very, very into a lot of sort of rape fantasy stuff there, which was, you know, comic wise, which was quite sort of uncomfortable. And, you know, there's certainly elements that I think there are lines that can be drawn. But then again, you know, it's a very personal thing. It's a difficult thing. I think that there is probably plenty of stuff in the second volume of Erotic Comics, which you know, people would find is perhaps over the limit. But it is, it's a difficult one to kind of draw on that, on that line. I mean, I think there are certain barriers, and I would have said, you know, perhaps not sort of bestiality, but thinking about it, there is actually a very bizarre strip called Bondage Fairies, which is drawn by a Japanese artist, Kondom. Now, that is very cute and seemingly prepubescent, sort of fairies having sex with all sorts of sort of animal wildlife, from squirrels to crickets to sort of beetles. It's all very bizarre, you know, and very Japanese in their kind of approach. And it's, you know, but having said that it's bestiality, it just, because it's so kind of left of center, it doesn't seem sort of that kind of bad. I don't know. And it's, you know, in the translations that were done, there's fantastic stuff where they've actually started putting in sort of Stan Lee-style dialogue from the 60s. So you've got this grasshopper in the middle of having sex going, "My hopper senses tingle, and behold, a void of evil power runneth over. Excelsior!" You know. So you can tell that, you know, there is a deliberate, you know, self-mocking parody going on. And I think that is kind of the key. That kind of diffuses perhaps the power of the images by saying, actually, we're not really taking ourselves seriously here. Let's keep our tongue in our cheeks and, you know, and sort of just have a bit of a joke and a bit of a laugh. And I think that's a very important sort of point to make about erotic comics. I think there is material there that is there to arouse and to sense, but even that material can have a good sense of humor as well.
Did you have you gotten much I don't know if the term translates, but have you gotten much pushback on the decision to include the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender examples? It would seem like it might not quite be the same audience. I understand why you did, but
Yeah, no, I think, well, actually, the only kind of feedback I've had has been quite positive, actually, which is good. And I think, you know, it was one of those important aspects. I mean, certainly one woman that said to me, which was like, well, why, you know, in the first book, why is it all women? You know, and this is a really kind of good point, that why aren't there any sort of naked men in there? And that was something that, you know, I had to really look at and say, well, you know, we've got to address the balance here and make sure that, you know, everyone's being catered for. And that's why it was important to have the, you know, there's been a gay material in there, because otherwise you'd be just kind of ignoring, you know, a sizable chunk. You know, and it was also important to, you know, yeah, get that healthy balance, really, I think, of material, just to show what's out there. So, yeah, the only kind of feedback I've had has been kind of quite positive. And again, you know, with every book, there's always stuff that people have, you know, flipped pages on who you're not necessarily interested in. But even if you're not interested in the artwork, I always say that it's worth reading the stories, because there is a lot of interesting history of, say, gay rights and, you know, how comics were tied to that. So I think, you know, you wouldn't necessarily sort of be into the strips, or it doesn't do anything for you, but you'll learn something as well.
Well, I mean, you have work in there and by Howard Cruise, and he's cited even by Alan Moore, and I know Howard. I actually have spent some time with him, but I just personally, yeah, I just don't have that much interest in the gay comics, and yeah, I did kind of skip through that. I respect his work, certainly, and like him, but I you know, I'm just not that interested in reading gay comics. But I understand,
sure,
that if you're trying to explain the whole spread, if you will, of what's happened with erotic comics, you kind of have to cover that, or else somebody's going to come along and say, well, that's not a very good book, it didn't include this.
Well, exactly. I think, you know, it would be disingenuous to think that this sort of material doesn't exist. And, you know, that, you know, to pretend it's not sort of happening, I think, would be, you know, it would make the book lesser. And some people did pick up on the first volume that there wasn't anything in there, but that was because I was deliberately holding it back for volume two. So we did try and cover as many kind of I guess you could say sort of fetishes or quirks or kind of aspects of sexuality that has been covered within comics. So, you know, that it was all encompassing. I think, you know, that is important. So, you know.
So you've done two volumes now. Will there be a third?
Well, it's been thought about, but because we did it essentially in a kind of chronological order, the only thing I think we could really do is to do kind of like the future of, which is very hard, or now. And there's already a couple of there's an annual a regular anthology now that's coming out that started last year, which is the best erotic comics of 2008. Excuse me. And so that kind of area has already been covered. So, I mean, it's interesting whenever you're kind of doing these sort of books that you want to put so much material in, and you could end up doing a book that's kind of like sort of a 1,000 pages long and just include everybody, but the practicalities always demand that you can only show so much or only include so many artists. And there were a lot of people who I'd like to have put in there, but we just didn't have the space. So never say never, but I think it would need to have some sort of strong theme. It's got to have a reason for doing it rather than just saying, oh, here's more erotic comics. I think, you know, what we did here was a pretty good sort of history of. So, you know, maybe we could do an expanded edition, a collected expanded edition, and sort of just pop in some extra material and do one big collector's volume. That would be a nice thing to do.
Did you have to edit much material out for the American edition? The book was published, I should point out. It's published first by what I think is your press, ILEX, in
ILEX Press in the UK, and simultaneously published by Abrams Comics Arts in the US. And no, it was very interesting, actually, in terms of censorship and things. I thought very much, well, you know, how much is too much? And, you know, there was obviously a certain amount of self-censorship going on, but I was generally and pleasantly surprised that we didn't really get any feedback saying, oh, no, you can't do this or you can't do that. It was they were quite open, really. So, and, you know, the response has been sort of very positive, which has been nice.
Hmm. Now, before we wrap up, tell folks what some other titles that you've published are and what you have coming up.
Oh, in terms of with ILEX Press and, well, we've got just come out in the UK and due to come out soon, excuse me, is a History of War Comics by Mike Conroy, who is, he's done a couple of books on comics and is editor of Comics International, which is a trade magazine in the UK. And that's a really interesting book on the history of war comics, looking at conflicts through sequential order rather than looking at it through the publishing dates of the comics. So you start with things like the Spartans and 300 and that period, going right up to the Iraq War and Afghanistan, but showing each conflict through the filter of comics. And how that's changed, whether it's been very anti-comics, anti-war comics, or propaganda, pro-war propaganda from both sides. So it's a really interesting book, and we've got Garth Ennis has done a great foreword for that as well. So that's out in the UK now, and due out in the US, I think in about a month's time. So that's coming out. And another title we just released is Comic Book Design by Gary Spencer Millage. Gary has self-published his comic Strange Haven for years and is very up on the technical aspects of comics. What he's done is a really fantastic book looking at a lot of art books that are out there, and there are a lot that teach you how to draw comics or how to write comics. But there's nothing out there that actually teaches you how to really design comics. So he's looked at everything from logo designs to laying out sort of covers to doing page layouts, looking at how color and form and all of these aspects make up actually a good page layout on a comic, and why do ballooning and how ballooning makes a page flow better. and all of these kind of technical aspects. It sounds very dry, but what he's done is he's used a lot of real-world examples. So you've got some really fantastic art and then lots of explanatory text explaining why that that page works so well. And so we've got, you know, examples from A League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, Sean Phillips, and David Lloyd material. So lots of big names in that. So, and then coming up are big titles for the autumn, which is also coming out from Abrams, is The Art of Osamu Tezuka, which is a huge art book, which has been, it's the only art book that's been authorized by Tezuka Productions. We've been working with them, and we've managed to sort of use their archives of tons of material that has never seen print or either in Japan or outside of Japan. So we've got some really fantastic behind-the-scenes artwork and stuff for tying in with the launch of the Astro Boy movie. So, and that's also going to come with a DVD documentary that's not been seen outside of Japan as well. So yeah, there's a lot of exciting things on the horizon.
Very good. Very good. Well, folks, listen, you can, if you're old enough, wherever you may be listening to this, you can find Tim Pilcher's two-volume erotic comics, A Graphic History, in great bookstores everywhere, or online at mrmedia.com or amazon.com. And, Tim, this was a lot of fun.
That's great. Well, thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Thanks for coming on. Well, I don't know about brilliant. Well, okay, it was brilliant. I'll go along with that. I do not want to, you know, disagree with a guest. Of course, that would not be polite. But thank you very much for joining us on the show today. It was a lot of fun to talk about, and, you know, come back again.
That's great. Thanks a lot, Bob. Bye.
All right, Tim. Take care. Bye-bye. And, folks, for more interviews with your favorite comics artists and writers, surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my earlier conversations with Dave Gibbons, Dennis Kitchen, Monty Wolverton, Trina Robbins, Gene Colan, Mike Gold, Wendy Peeney, Joe Sinnott, Chuck Dixon, Peter Cooper, Drew Friedman, Daniel Pink, and many others. And please think about writing an online review of Mr. Media, casting a vote for Mr. Media, or marking Mr. Media as one of your favorites, whether you listen on Blog Talk Radio, True Slant, Digital Journal, Vox, Podcast Pickle, Mediafly, Podfeed.net, Blueberry, Zencast, Zimbio, or Odeo. Subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. Or subscribe to Mr. Media's blog on the Amazon Kindle Reader. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. That's A-N-D-E-L-M-A-N. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter. It's www.twitter.com/Andelman. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate when you give up a piece of your day. Spend it with us. Thanks for listening, everybody.